Hello, I'm Stephanie McFarland. This is number 0362, the Stuffpile program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuffpile program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuffpile program, number 0362. And coming up on this edition of the Stuffpile program, you'll meet Davy Rothbart, who is the creator of Found Magazine, which features letters and items that are found. This all started with a note mistakenly left on his car.
I came out to my car late one night, and I saw on my windshield a note addressed to Mario. I opened it up to read it, and it said, "Mario, I hate you. You said you had to work, then why is your car here at her place? You're a liar. I hate you, I hate you. Signed Amber. P.S. Page me later." You know, I was just caught by this note because, first of all, she obviously left it on the wrong car. But then just all these complicated emotions. She was so angry and upset with him, but still kind of hopeful and sweet. P.S. Page me later. It just made me think about all the notes and letters I'd sort of seen blowing down the street over the years.
Calliope Barless, author of Replay Your Game, is on to help people with the fear of clowns. What is it about clowns that terrifies some folks?
They see an image of a clown or see a clown in person or on a movie, and for whatever reason, the image of the clown ends up scaring them in such a way that whenever they think of a clown, just the mere thought of it scares them. And that's because how they're thinking about them is making them scared. When they think of a clown, the clown is usually life-size or larger than life. So because it's so big in their mind's eye, it ends up having this dramatic response in how they feel.
Talent agent Nicole Pryor shares tips on getting your child into acting.
The most important thing beyond talent is passion. I need to make sure that the kid is interested and excited about a career in acting before they even get started. I don't want the parent to be more excited about the career than the child. I always interview the child and make sure that they're interested in it, because if not, it's not going to last and it's not going to be a great career and they're not going to have a good time, because a big portion of being an actor in this business is a lot of rejection.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0362 was Stephanie McFarlane, one of my nieces. Thank you very much, Stephanie, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuffpile program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Love you, Stephanie. Thank you very much. Now, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, according to police in Pennsylvania, a man told his aunt that he stole a human brain in order to use it to produce strong marijuana that causes hallucinations. Don't worry, it wasn't a brain from someone who was recently living, in case you're wondering. Carlisle police arrested 26-year-old Joshua Long after being accused of conspiring with his friends to produce potent marijuana using the stolen human brain. Long was charged with abuse of a corpse and conspiracy to commit abuse of a corpse. He was booked into the Cumberland County Prison, and his bail was set at $100,000. Police are still looking for his accomplices. Now, according to the police investigation, Long's aunt discovered the human brain in a Walmart shopping bag under the porch of a mobile home belonging to his friend. When the aunt asked Long about the brain, he admitted that he and Zoller used it to produce strong marijuana. Yeah, right. Police believe that the brain was used as a specimen for teaching. First of all, not exactly sure how the science in this case works, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. Second, when was the last time any authoritative person in your family, be it parents, grandparents, aunts, or uncles, came to you and asked the question, "What are you doing with this brain?" That's not a sentence you hear every day. And years from now, when Joshua goes to the great beyond, Will there be anything left of his brain to smoke? Yeah, I don't know. Moving right along, Daniel Wolfe was walking to the library in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, when a man tried to rob him. The weapon used? An electric guitar. I was on the phone with 911 when he hit me, Wolfe said of the incident, which the local newspaper dubbed a guitar-armed robbery attempt. Yeah, like that? Guitar-armed robbery attack? Wolf fended off the attack with his arm, which left a gash that required stitches. After a tug of war over Wolf's computer case, the man ran off, but police quickly caught up to 23-year-old Edward J. Chestnut III, who was held on weapons charges. Wow. An electric guitar as a weapon. Good thing it wasn't plugged in, huh? Yeah. I wonder if Edward yelled El Kabong before he hit Daniel. And you know, folks, you have to be of a certain age to get that remark. And to those of you who got it, you're welcome. You're also old. Here's a criminal charge that you don't hear very often. A man armed with a fire extinguisher attempted to put out the Olympic flame the second time someone tried to douse the flame on its trip to the 2016 Summer Games. Video shows a man running from the crowd as the torchbearers passed through Joinville and attempted unsuccessfully to spray the flame with a fire extinguisher before apparently being apprehended by security. According to Fox Sports, the man's motivations were unknown, but he was arrested for attempting to put out the flame symbolizing the spirit of the competition at the Games. A similar failed attempt to extinguish the Olympic flame was made in June when a 27-year-old man, acting on a dare, flung a bucket of water on the torch, but missed and doused security guards. Well, let's see. The Zika virus, crime, corruption, political upheaval, and now this. The ongoing train wreck that is the Rio Games is quickly barreling toward the station, folks. Brace yourself. And a burglar who broke into the Ormond Brewing Company in Ormond Beach, Florida, was pretty serious. Security camera images show he was wearing a pistol on his belt. He was able to break open the safe and the cash register, but each contained less than $30. On the other hand, the burglar accidentally left behind his Glock 9mm pistol, which retails for around $500. So, he's out about $450. Wow. Even burglars are in the red in this economy. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a new mother got revenge against a milk thief at work by replacing the liquid with her breast milk, according to a photo that was uploaded to the internet. The woman, who was not identified, said that she was fed up with a person taking her milk from the fridge at work, so she decided to take revenge and hopefully deter others from stealing. After replacing the milk with her breast milk, the woman wrote a note and placed it on the bottle to let the thief know what he had been drinking with his coffee for the past week or so. The note stated, "Good morning. To whomever has been enjoying my coffee creamer all week, surprise, you've been drinking my breast milk. Hope you enjoyed it. Cheers." The woman, however, added that she has some good news for the thief, as her breast milk is organic and all natural versus the milk that was originally in the bottle. Well, apparently this story is the most literal example of the term tit for tat. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Davy Rothbart is a best-selling author and a contributor to the hit public radio show This American Life. He's also the creator of Found Magazine and the new podcast series of the same name that just started. It shares personal stories through lost and found notes. To talk about how this all got started, we are joined by Davy Rothbart, who is on the line via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Davy.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, absolutely.
The idea, I'm maybe new to this, but the idea sure. of Found sounds like such a great one. And now you've got a podcast to go with it. So let's go back to the idea of Found. How did that all start?
Yeah, so Found Magazine first started about 15 years ago. I was living in Chicago, and what happened was, I came out to my car late one night, and I saw on my windshield a note addressed to Mario. Now, my name's Davey, so I'm like, all right, who's Mario? What's this note all about? I opened it up to read it, and it said, Mario, I hate you. You said you had to work, then why is your car here at her place? You're a liar. I hate you, I hate you. Signed Amber. P.S. Page me later. And, you know, I was just caught by this note because, first of all, she obviously left it on the wrong car. You know, she thought my car was Mario's car, that he was cheating on her or something. But then just all these complicated emotions. She was so angry and upset with him, but still kind of hopeful and sweet. You know, P.S. Page me later. And so it just made me think about all the notes and letters I'd sort of seen blown down the street over the years. Maybe a kid's drawing, maybe a Polaroid you find in the gutter or on the floor of the city bus. So I decided to start Found Magazine. It's kind of a way for everybody to share what they were finding with everybody else. You know, to-do lists, post-it notes, grocery lists. But each one gives you a little glimpse into someone else's life.
Now,
so,
it's one thing to start this idea of a magazine. It's one thing to start collecting stuff like this for a magazine. But did you ever in a million years think people would actually send stuff into you?
Well, I did not think it would expand in the ways that it did. Like, I knew a few friends who are weird like me and sort of curious about other people's lives. And, you know, I thought maybe some of them – my initial idea was to make 50 copies of this, you know, just a little handmade zine basically. But what was really stunning to me was the way that it grew and how quickly, you know – people began sending finds in from all over the country, all over the United States, and really all around the world. We had our website, foundmagazine.com, and so we started posting new finds every day on the Found Magazine website. And yeah, it was, I have to say, it was kind of stunning. But it was exciting to see that, you know, this idea of, you know, just getting a real glimpse of people through these found notes, you know, that it resonated with so many people.
Now, getting back to Mario, and was it Amber?
Yes.
Did you ever get in contact with either or?
Well, I never was able to find them. I wish she had left her pager number so I could have paged her and explained, you know, the mistake. But in a way, Mario and Amber is what really sparked the idea for the Found podcast. So over the years, we've published so many letters in Found Magazine and in these Found books. And there are people I've always wondered about and sort of wished I could reach out to and hear the real story behind their note. You know, part of the fun is just imagining what the story is. But a few times people have said, hey, that's mine. You know, they've recognized their found letter in the magazine and getting to talk to them has been kind of magical, you know. So with the Found podcast, what we're doing is taking these letters. Some of them literally were found 10, 15 years ago, some of them more recently. But I'm tracking down the people who wrote them and discovering their real stories.
Wow. In the years that you started the magazine, what would you say is the percentage of items within that you got a conclusion to as far as story is concerned?
Well, it's really only happened maybe a dozen times that somebody has reached out and you know, seen their note on the Found Magazine website or in one of the magazines. And, of course, the other thing, we often change the names or you know, phone numbers to keep them anonymous. We're not trying to out anybody or get anyone in trouble. But these are real letters. They're very raw and revealing. They're, you know, sometimes quite personal. But a few times people have reached out. They either were a bit honored or usually just mystified. Like, why would anyone care about these little details of my love life? And I explain to them, hey, we can relate to it. You know, I've written the same pitiful love note 100 times myself. And one girl got in touch recently. She saw a note in Found Magazine number 1. She was at a friend's house, and she saw this letter she had written years ago about these two guys she was dating, Kevin and Chad. She was trying to figure out what to do. She was asking her friend for advice. Well, she emailed me and said, hey, that's mine. We started emailing back and forth, and she gave me a whole update. She was like, hey, I'm back with Kevin, but Chad's coming up this weekend to visit, so I still don't know what's going to happen. So those kind of experiences kind of lit the idea for the podcast. And in the first episode of the podcast, we took a letter. It was written 15 years ago, found in Los Angeles. It's a guy who is writing a letter to an entertainment company. His name is Jet, and he says that he wants to become the Asian Oprah. He wants to be a mega famous TV talk show host. And he's a pretty articulate guy. He lays out some pretty compelling reasons why he would be a great talk show host and the need for more Asians on TV. And so obviously, it didn't work because I have never heard of Jet. He's not the Asian Oprah. But I've been so curious over the years, like, what happened to this guy? Where is he? And so we were able to kind of track him down and kind of explore the themes behind the find itself, but also find the real guy and learn what he's up to now.
Hmm. By the way, Kevin and Chad, those are not two names from the hood. I just tell you that right now.
No, I think that was suburban Chicago where that find.
It's been 15 years since you first started doing this, and times have changed in those 15 years. We now have a big explosion of social media. Does social networking, social media make what you do easier or harder?
Well, that's a great question. Definitely, like, people are not putting pen to paper so much anymore, so there's less of these handwritten notes floating around. But I will say that as technology evolves, the ways that you can find stuff evolves. Like, you know, people will send an email, but then someone might print out that email and, you know, it falls out of their backpack. It's on the bus. It's in the bowling alley parking lot. You know, sometimes you'll find a cell phone now and it's maybe filled with photographs, you know. So in years past, you might have found a stack of photos in the alleyway. Now you'll find a phone with 50 pictures on it. A guy in Baltimore, he told me that he got his dad's in his 80s, and he got his dad his first cell phone. And as soon as he activated it, a stream of text messages started pouring through. And apparently they were from some girl texting her ex-boyfriend who had the same phone number previously. And so you just read the stream, and he wasn't even responding, but you read the stream of text messages. It's kind of a way to get a glimpse into someone else's life just through that. So... yes, and the last thing I'll say about that is that when people do have something really important on their mind, that's when people will put pen to paper and write an actual letter. You know, if you're ending a marriage after 15 years, or if you're writing to a coworker who you've always been in love with, you know, that's when you will write a handwritten letter. And so the letters that are being written are sometimes the most interesting.
Okay, so Found started off as a magazine. You now got a podcast, which has just started. But you've also, somewhere along the way, had a musical?
Yes, so it's these great folks in New York City. They took all these Found letters. They put it into this... I mean, to be honest, I couldn't quite see how they were going to adapt, you know, Found magazine into a musical. But I have to say, it's like a pretty incredible... it's a pretty incredible experience. They really bring all these stories to life, and the tone is just right because, of course, you're not mocking the authors of these notes. You're sort of celebrating our collective weirdness, you know, and they tell a great story in it too. They have a Tony-nominated playwright, Hunter Bell, and an incredible composer, Eli Bolin. So anyway, it played at the Atlantic Theater in New York, a beautiful off-Broadway stage that was founded by David Mamet and William H. Macy. And it's playing in Philadelphia this fall, and then their plan is to bring it to Broadway. So we'll see if that happens. It'd be great. The play is fantastic.
Well, you started a little empire for yourself. We should mention that people can find out more information by going to foundmagazine.com. That's where they can find out the information. Also, you have the new podcast, which just started, and the best way to find that is
You can go to iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, go and download the Found podcast. It's really easy to find. You can also go to wondery.com/found, and that's like wonder with a Y at the end, wondery.com/found, and that's got all the episodes. We've got our first episode up and many more to come. So we hope people will listen, and we hope they'll send in their finds because we're always collecting more.
Excellent. Congratulations on everything you've done, Davey, and thank you for being on the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me as a guest, Peter. I really appreciate it, and look forward to connecting with your listeners.
Davey Rothbart, creator of Found Magazine and the star of the new Found podcast. Give it a listen. It's really great. You can find out more info by going to his website at foundmagazine.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0362, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about the fear of clowns. Plus, we'll tell you what you need to know to get your child into the acting game by talking to a top-notch LA talent agent. We also have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, residents of a Baltimore apartment complex received a visit from a pair of bulls that escaped from a local slaughterhouse. The bulls escaped from the Old Line Custom Meat Company and found their way into the parking lot of a nearby apartment complex at around 7 a.m. Baltimore police arrived on the scene and used portable gates along with the complex's natural barriers to temporarily trap the bulls. They were able to get some fencing over here and fence them in, and we had them contained, said a Baltimore police spokesperson. However, the bulls knocked over the fencing a couple of times, so we had to move people back. The bulls were finally captured at about 10:30 a.m. before temperatures reached nearly 100 degrees. No one was hurt in the incident. You know, I often like to have food delivered to my house, and I like to have it fresh, but I do have my limits as to just how fresh it needs to be. And according to a statement from the Boy Scouts of America, a restaurant extended support to help make a local Cub Scout day camp possible and provided volunteers for the camp. Parents, however, were not happy about this particular restaurant sponsoring a Frontier District day camp in Denver, Colorado. Michelle Kettleborough discovered the sponsorship when she picked up her 7-year-old son from the camp. "I stepped back for a second," she said, "and I take a look and I'm like, are they wearing Hooters visors?" After parents complained, Hooters Colorado took down photos from their Facebook page showing volunteers wearing traditional Hooters-style attire. "It's just the philosophies of the two organizations are polar opposites, and I just don't think they should be together," said Marcia Korn, who also sent her concerns to the local Boy Scout chapter. The restaurant assisted with the costs of putting on the camp, and through their community volunteering, several of their waitresses donated their time to help staff the camp, a district executive replied. He went on to say, "Glad to hear your son had such a good time." Yes, I'm sure the boys themselves didn't complain. And by the way, I wonder which merit badge they would have earned that day. Yes. An unnamed 48-year-old man from Macomb Township, Michigan, was camping in Oceana County. He didn't think his 9mm pistol was loaded and managed to shoot himself in the hand. according to Sheriff's Lieutenant Craig Mast. He then chose to fire off another round into the bed in the camper he was staying in because he was upset that he just wounded himself. Prosecutors are reviewing the case and may recommend charges against the man, perhaps the reckless discharge of a firearm. Although the legislative suggestion for a new crime is probably the stupid discharge of a firearm. A lot of people would be behind bars for that. And authorities have arrested a couple accused of riding naked on a stolen lawnmower in Missouri. Jasper County Sheriff's Detective Tim Williams said a 55-year-old man and a 40-year-old woman admitted they rode the lawnmower home naked after their clothing was stolen while they skinny-dipped in a creek northwest of Joplin. The Joplin Globe reports that authorities arrested the pair on Tuesday morning on suspicion of stealing after finding them at a house with the riding mower parked in the front yard. Williams says an investigation determined that the lawnmower didn't belong to either of them. Well, to be honest, if you've been skinny-dipping and someone has stolen your clothes, you really have to improvise with what is around you. Don't you? Kinda? Yeah. Anyway, finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police in Lumberton, North Carolina are investigating a shooting at a Sonic drive-in restaurant. 24-year-old employee Telvin Drummond had a verbal confrontation with the husband of one of the restaurant's managers, leading to both men shooting at each other. Telvin wasn't shot, but the other man was struck by gunfire and was treated for non-life-threatening injuries. The name of the 36-year-old man who was shot? Ronald McDonald. Yes, Ronald McDonald was shot at a Sonic drive-in restaurant. The investigation is still ongoing. No comments from either Colonel Sanders or the Burger King, by the way. Seriously, this guy is 36-year-old, Ronald is. So what I want to know is, let's go back 36 years. Ronald McDonald was a big deal then. What were his parents thinking when they named him Ronald? What? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And oh yeah, we're going to talk, speaking of Ronald McDonald, we're going to talk about clowns right now. Coulrophobia. That's a term that some people might think is a joke, but it's no laughing matter to people who suffer from it. It's the fear of clowns, and it's more common than you think. Calliope Barlas is an expert on releasing phobias. Her upcoming book is Replay Your Game, and she joins us on the line from New York. Hi, Calliope.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thanks for having me.
I keep coming across people, and I keep hearing about this. People are actually afraid of clowns. And while I'm not one who's afraid of clowns, I can kind of see what they're afraid of. But from your perspective, where does this start? Is it something that happens to people as children and they grow into it? Or what is it about clowns that terrifies them so?
Well, typically what happens is that when people are kids, or even if when they are adults, they see an image of a clown or see a clown in person or on a movie, and for whatever reason, the image of the clown ends up scaring them in such a way that whenever they think of a clown, just the mere thought of it scares them. And that's because how they're thinking about them is making them scared. And what do I mean by that? I mean that when they think of a clown, that the clown is usually life-size or larger than life. So because it's so big in their mind's eye, it ends up having this dramatic response in how they feel. And they end up getting this fight-or-flight response to it that they wish they didn't get.
Is it a bit of an irrational fear? The reason why I bring that up, I've mentioned this on the program time and time again. I have a fear of water. I know it's an irrational fear. I've never been in a situation where I was nearly drowned or any of those situations. I just have a fear of water. Is it the same thing with any other kind of phobia, especially with clowns? Is it an irrational fear? There's no basis as to why people feel this way?
Well, let's put it this way. When you say that you fear water, is it all water? Is it drinking water? I mean, are you afraid? Are there times when you think you're going to drown just by drinking it? Probably not, right?
Right.
So the idea is that I'll ask you right now, when you think of water, is it life-sized or larger than life?
It's large bodies of water. Like, I won't get in a boat. No matter.
Right. Okay.
And when I say a boat, I won't get in a dinghy. I won't get on the largest cruise ship. I won't get on a boat.
Right. Okay. So if I'm to ask you this question, if you think of yourself on a dinghy, then the water seems a lot larger than you.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. Versus if you were on a cruise ship, you feel large enough, and the water is smaller.
Not really.
In your mind's eye?
Not really.
Okay.
It's still
okay,
a large
still
body
large.
Water. Yeah.
Okay. But still, you feel bigger.
A little, but not enough to get on one.
Okay, right. Not enough to get on a cruise ship.
Exactly. You won't get me on that
okay.
either.
Right. So what ends up happening with any fear is that the fear itself and how we think of it ends up being this magnanimous size inside of our minds where it's just overwhelming. And so what I do is guide people on how to actually shrink it in their mind's eye so that when they shrink it, it becomes manageable, but they won't have the same response to it as they did as if it was big inside their mind. So yeah, basically any phobia, whether it be of a snake or a spider or crowds or water or clowns, it's basically the same mechanism as how they're thinking about it. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what the phobia is, but typically it's the same how they're thinking about it is the same.
Well, unlike other phobias, when it comes to the fear of clowns, other phobias are of things that are always what they are. That's not the case when it comes to a clown. Would it make a person feel better if they sat down and watched a person put on the makeup and become a clown? Would that help to alleviate the fear, or is that not the case?
Well, I can't speak for everyone, but I know a couple of people who have actually told me that it becomes an agonizing process because they're actually seeing the whole thing come together, right? And it's the end product that really matters here. And so basically a lot of the time I tell people, you know, I think most of the time it's a matter of poor taste because a lot of clowns just have bad makeup on. You know, usually the colors are bleeding on their face and somehow the smile isn't exactly accurate. And it ends up being scary for most people. And so to actually put it on step by step and see if it's dependent on the individual because sometimes when you slow down a process like that and see it actually being built, it will break apart the fear for some people. And for some people, it actually magnify it. So it really depends on the individual.
If phobias, I'm just wondering, and again, we'll stick with the fear of clowns, do phobias get worse the longer they are not dealt with? In other words, somebody who is a child who is afraid of clowns, are they more afraid of clowns the older they get?
It's dependent upon if they're thinking about it any differently. Because to generalize with all people, it really depends on the individual and the individual response. So, for instance, I just had a client who came in last week, and she had this fear for 20 years of a clown, of any clown. She couldn't take her kids to the circus because she couldn't be around the clowns. I mean, at some point, walking down the streets of New York City, she actually saw a clown inside of a store and left her infant baby in the carriage. It was a fight-or-flight response that she had. She just could not deal with it to the extent where she abandoned her child. Okay, that was totally irrational. And so that's what let her come to me, that something like this was just unacceptable to her. And so what we did was do some mind tricks, mind skills that I know how to do with people in the right state of mind, in a relaxed state of mind, because it basically changes the brain chemistry when they think about it. The minute I can get someone into a relaxed state of mind and even laugh about it when they think about it, I've changed the brain patterns inside the brain. So whenever they think about it, they feel differently about it. And that's basically where people want to get to, that they can think about the clown, but have a different feeling associated to it, therefore a different response.
Very interesting indeed. In the introduction, I mentioned your upcoming book, Replay Your Game. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yep, and the full title is Replay Your Game, Erase Your Fears, Shed Your Stress, and Build Your Best Life Ever. Because so many people have these fears that cause them a lot of stress, that prevent them from having the connectedness with their families and friends, and basically the world at large. You know, phobias prevent people from living their lives the most that they can. People who have a fear of flying, they don't travel to places. I had a client who hadn't traveled on a plane for 20 years, and her kids were just entering their teens, and they had never been on a family vacation by plane. And so when her child started developing the same sorts of fears and phobias, she said, okay, I can have this happening to my own daughter. And so that was incentive enough, and we went through some skills that are talked about in the book, step by step, that can guide you to get rid of your fears, feel better about things that you were once fearful about, repatterning the pathways in the brain to make it happen just by doing the skills, and so that you can start living your life with greater freedom and having the intimacy and love and connectedness with those people you love the most, and not only personally, but professionally in business. And that's really what it's all about, creating more freedom for people.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is buildingyourbest.com. That's buildingyourbest.com. Calliope, thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. Most enlightening conversation indeed.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and all the best to you and your listeners.
Calliope Barlas, author of the upcoming book, Replay Your Game. You can find out more info by going to our website at buildingyourbest.com. And you can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0362, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Peter Doig is a Scottish artist whose paintings can sell for millions of dollars. So when a Canadian man found a painting in his home with the name Peter Doig on it, he thought he was rich, even though the signature was slightly different from the artist's. Unfortunately, when he was preparing to sell it at auction, the artist told him he didn't paint it. The fortune the man thought he had fizzled, and now he's actually suing the artist for millions instead. The Canadian man, who was a corrections officer, says he bought the painting from Doig when he claims the artist was in jail in Thunder Bay decades ago. The artist says he was never in jail in Thunder Bay, and new records recently revealed that another man named Peter Doig, who spelled his last name with an E at the end, unlike the artist, was incarcerated at the jail. Let's be fair, the case should be thrown out immediately, right? Well, it probably would be if it had been filed in either Canada or Scotland, but it was filed in America, and a judge is allowing the lawsuit to move forward. Surprised? Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to a talent agent about kid actors. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But right now, a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you. The Transportation Security Administration announced in May that it had collected $765,000 in loose change left behind in airport scanner trays during 2015, an average haul for the agency of $2,100 a day. Numbers assuming, of course, that TSA personnel turn in all the money they find. Los Angeles and Miami airports contributed $106,000 of that total. So you see, economists have always been right. Pennies do add up. And still by the numbers, 49-year-old Mark Heron of Sunderland, England, was arrested again in May, his 448th arrest on alcohol-related charges. The year started out well for Heron, with only 14 callers through March, and he cleaned up briefly before a family bereavement sent him spiraling downward again. His current lawyer admitted that his client had been in court more often than he himself has. Well, given those numbers, does he really need a lawyer? Yeah. And police in Massachusetts say a tall man was pulled over after driving while standing up with his upper body sticking out through the sunroof. Higham police shared a photo of officers handcuffing the 6'7" man who was seen standing up through his sunroof while driving his car. According to a report that the police wrote, motorists followed the car with the driver, who was standing through sunroof and driving today. The driver also had a suspended driver's license, according to police. Well, you know, they always have a suspended license in these stories, don't they? And by the way, how does this guy drive when it rains? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police were called to a lingerie store in Nashville, Tennessee, for a reported theft. An employee said a man walked into the store, grabbed a mannequin valued at over $5,000, and took it outside. After arguing with an employee in the parking lot, the man put the mannequin in his truck and drove off, leaving only her left arm behind. Officers used the truck's license plates to trace the mannequin to a house where they found 55-year-old Christopher Wade in bed with it. I think I need to repeat that. 55-year-old Christopher Wade was in bed with the mannequin. Wade was arrested on theft charges and held on $11,000 bond. The arm, which connected magnetically, was easily reattached to the mannequin. Wow, if he was feeling lonely before, jail isn't exactly going to be a walk in the park for this guy, is it? No. I don't think so. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? If you have a talented child, what should you know before you head off to Hollywood? That's a question for Nicole Pryor, who is a Hollywood agent. She joins us on the line right now from Maine. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, how's it going?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk about Hollywood and the Hollywood kids, and let's do it.
I've had an opportunity to talk to several child stars over the years, some who have had very successful careers and loved it, some who have had very successful careers and did not. So it runs the spectrum of the type of individual that exists in life. But what I want to know is, what do you look for when it comes to someone coming to you who says, I think my child has the potential to be a star? What are you looking for?
I'm first of all looking for talent, and but there's a lot of talented kids, so that almost is irrelevant, I will say. The most important thing beyond talent is passion. I need to make sure that the kid is interested and excited about a career in acting before they even get started. I don't want the parent to be more excited about the career than the child. I always interview the child and make sure that they're interested in it, because if not, it's not going to last, and it's not going to be a great career, and they're not going to have a good time, because a big portion of being an actor in this business is a lot of rejection. And a child actor who goes into this business not loving it from the get-go is going to fizzle out very quickly if they don't approach it from a place of love for the craft of acting. Because at their first audition, they're probably not going to book it. So they have to realize that each audition is an opportunity for them to just go in there and have a good time and act, whether or not they book the job or not. So So if they're not into it from the beginning, I cannot sign them and I will not work with them.
Well, speaking of rejection, do you do anything to help a child deal with that aspect? For instance, just recently I was watching, America's Got Talent. And there was a young comedian who was only 6 years old, and he was amazing. He was absolutely amazing, and he got so far. But just recently, he was voted off by the judges. He's not making it to the live shows, and it was just like it was heartbreaking. You know what I mean? And this kid was so stoic and so great. I've seen adults who were rejected on that show who just broke down. This kid was great. But I had the fear that this was going to scar the kid. Turns out the kid has a great attitude. So how do you deal with that when you're dealing with such young children?
When I deal with not only young children but also adult actors, the aspect of rejection is a big part of the industry as a whole and also life. And I think the most important thing that a child actor needs to know is that they're not being rejected because they're not talented. It's because maybe they weren't tall enough for the role. Maybe they needed somebody with blonde hair and you have brown hair. Maybe it's that you have blue eyes and we needed someone with brown eyes. It has nothing to do with the child and their talent. It has everything to do with the fact that they just weren't right for that particular role. And I will go back to the beginning. If their passion is just acting, I always tell them, you were successful. If you walked in there and did a good job, the only time they should be disappointed is if they went in there and messed up and didn't do a good job, didn't do the preparation, and went in there and didn't do what they were supposed to do and do what they prepared to do. That's the only time I will accept a disappointed child, because if you don't not booking a job is not a failure. Not getting it is not a failure. But not doing the preparation that goes into doing a good job is the failure. And that's the only part of this business that you can control, is how much you prepare.
As an agent who often works with children, is it difficult dealing with their parents?
Yes, 100%. I will not deal. So first it starts with me vetting basically the child and making sure that the child is interested. If the child is not interested, it's usually the parent who is. And many would call those stage parents. And stage moms is the main term, because it's usually mothers, but there are stage dads as well. So let's just say stage parents. But then there are times I will deal with stage parents if the child is in fact talented and interested. But those are the hardest ones to deal with, and it's really just because they have a passion and a desire for the fame and attention that comes from their child's talent, and so they tend to be a little bit more overbearing. They tend to try and almost do our job for us, the one thing that I look for when I'm interviewing a child, I also interview the parents, so that they understand that we are a team. And that ultimately, the agent's job is to guide the child actor, and the parent's job is to support the child actor and to support them emotionally, make sure they're fed, make sure they're housed. But our job is to actually get them the job and kind of let's work together and drive kind of our lanes so that we you know, I'm not going to call them and make sure that dinner is served. So don't call me and and bug me about, you know, getting their child jobs. But at the same time, I don't mind feedback. I don't mind reaching out. It's just the approach. Sometimes it's a little harsh. And those type of parents are really challenging to deal with. So I really make a point of not dealing with those type of parents, to be honest. And there might be an agent out there who doesn't mind it. But for me, I really want a parent who is a team player.
Wants
to work together.
Does it make your job easier because you yourself have had a long career as a performer, that you know what performers go through, especially in the audition process, and you can help guide them through that?
Yes. I say this all the time. All the agents except for one on our team. We have 7 agents that work with my company, and all of us were performers before. And I always say one of the things that makes our company and our agency unique is that we all come to the table from the actor's perspective, which is rare. A lot of agents are maybe from the business side or lawyers, So for them, sometimes actors are numbers. And, you know, the more actors we have on board, the more, you know, someone's going to book. But it's all about the numbers, you know, getting them out. But for us and for me, one of the mottos that I have for my company and for the agency is that every actor has a dream, and it is not our response, our job to drop the ball on their dreams. It's a responsibility that we have, that we cannot drop the ball on somebody's dreams, period. As coming from the actor perspective, I understand it on a visceral level, because I know when I was performing regularly, that was all I wanted, was to perform. And my representation is the one who's supposed to get me the opportunities to perform. And so now that I am in the position to get the opportunities for other actors, I understand what they're going through, and I will do my best to never drop the ball on that pursuit for them. And when they are disappointed, I understand why they're disappointed, because I've been there. When they succeed, I understand why they're so excited, and I'm excited with them because I've been there. And just the whole process as a whole, I am with them on a visceral level because I've been there. And I think that's part of the reason why our company and our clients are doing so well.
And you mentioned your company. We should mention it's Firestarter Entertainment, correct?
Yep, correct. Firestarter Entertainment.
So finally, just one quick question. If somebody's out there listening and they say, you know, I do have a child and the child seems to be interested in wanting to be in the entertainment business in one way, shape, or form, but I don't know what to do or what my first step should be, what do you recommend that they do?
The very first step is get yourself into some acting classes, because interest and talent are just the first step. The second step is preparation. You can have a passion for anything in life. If you want to be a doctor and you really, really, really have a passion for medicine, you need to actually go to school. So, and that's the same case with being an actor. If you want to be an actor and you have a passion for it, passion only gets you so far. You need to get the education and the skills to actually compete on a professional level. And that goes for children. They might be little people with very few years on this earth, but some of these kids have been in acting class since they could talk. So they're in competition with, you know, very, very talented kids who are out there really, really working on the craft from the age of 5 on up. So if you're 10 years old and you just decided that you want to be an actor, you're almost 5 years behind in a way, you know. So you need to immediately get yourself into class. And then once you have the training, then you can start looking, just Google, you know, find a talent agent. But the most important thing you want to look at, if you're in California, you want to look at and make sure that your talent representative is registered with the state of California. You could basically look at the state of California's website, has a list of every single registered talent agent. That's the only way for you to know that that agency is reputable. And our agency is on there. Every reputable agency is on there.
Excellent.
So, and do not let them take any money from you. That's the other thing. We don't make money until you make money. That is the number one thing that people get scammed from. So do not pay anybody 1 cent.
Good information indeed, and valuable information as well. People can find out more information about your company by going to firestarterentertainment.com. That's firestarterentertainment.com. Nicole, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Talent agent Nicole Pryor. You can find out more info by going to her company's website at firestarterentertainment.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0362, and you'll find the link. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I got one more Stuff File news story that I want to share with you right here, right now. The strong smell caused by a man cooking urine, yeah, you heard me, has prompted the evacuation of an apartment building in Massachusetts. Police responded to the Amherst apartment complex Wednesday afternoon after the manager found several unmarked glass containers containing liquids in an apartment. Fire officials say the manager had received a complaint of a pungent odor. Assistant Fire Chief Lindsay Stromgren says the smell came from urine and possibly other chemicals. She says it's unclear what the man was trying to produce. He was identified but hasn't been criminally charged. A private cleanup company now has the chemicals. The tenants were allowed back in their apartments after authorities determined Wednesday night that the substances weren't explosive or a health hazard. You know, I've come across many a recipe, but never one that involves urine. Then again, maybe I don't watch the Food Network enough. Anyway, you know what time it is, boys and girls? We're at the end of the program, or at least very close to it. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A 28-year-old woman, unnamed in news reports, veered off the road and into a house in the Florida panhandle town of Mary Esther on July 7th. She apparently was free of drug or alcohol influence, but readily explained to police that she must have gone through a stop sign and left the road when she closed her eyes to pray as she drove. The house was damaged, but no one was injured. Clearly, she is now saying her prayers over the fact that she was driving while saying her prayers. Also clear is if you don't want to see the Lord well before your time, then you really have to open your eyes while driving. Because why, oh why, would you put your life in God's hands by praying with your eyes closed while behind the wheel of a moving vehicle? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0362. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information on links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0362. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.